You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner, Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron Jolly. It's great to be here. Thank you. On Thursday, 8/24/23, August 24th, nearing the end of Chris out there talking to him. He said, you know, I think we're heading into fall. And I said, yes. And I think a lot of folks up here are looking forward to fall season.
A lot of people are looking forward to it. Is that what you said?
Yeah, but we shouldn't start talking about that till after Labor Day.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not quite ready yet.
I'm not
Heidi's
quite ready.
Not one of those ready to talk okay. about
we
that.
We can still wear white.
That's right. I'm getting all my white in
yeah,
this
well,
week.
Yeah, I'm one of them. And talking there is the Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to be here.
It's great to have
in
you here.
In August.
Yes, indeed.
Summertime.
August. She reminds me. And all of you, indeed, our own RICP and Managing Executive. Great to have you here. And then Deanne Jennings, too.
Good
Hello,
morning.
Deanne.
Ooh, a moment
I was waiting
of
for
silence,
my title,
shall we?
So, yeah.
Yes, our Director Sorry. Of Operations. No worries.
Yes. Yeah. So good to be here. Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you with us, indeed. So today, because it is Thursday, please, questions are welcome. Now, today we're going to be talking about the main subject, if you will. What will you do with the extra cash as the Fed changes course? Now, this article was written back in May.
What extra
so
cash?
Long ago. Cash? Who's got cash? What? What? Investors who rushed for the exits last year, sending money market fund levels soaring to $5.2 trillion, may be wondering if it's time to retrace their steps. How do I get more yields on my money, as it were? Now, what's interesting about this is it's no longer $5.2 trillion. It is $5.5 trillion.
What is
Dennis
five,
looked what, it up this morning.
What's
money
five,
market fund balances.
Oh, really?
Yes. That is a lot of money on the sidelines. And this number, Ron, as you can see here, look at that. Isn't that stunning? Now, this is a 10-year time. No, this is back from 08.
It's a graph that
so
starts 08 high.
So 08 to 22 is how many years then? Just curious.
Are you looking to me to answer
yeah,
that?
About 14 or so, right?
I would go with years. 14.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So about 14, 15 years.
But that's
these
money
numbers
market
are
funds.
Stunning.
Why are there so much new money in the money market funds?
Well, because they're on the sidelines. They don't like what they see.
So they pulled it out of
yeah.
Well,
market.
Last year, the
Intra
market.
Market. Oh, yeah.
The market declined significantly. And some people are like, they don't like that. They
what,
want
what do the
to
money
go,
market funds pay in interest, roughly?
It depends on the money fund.
Okay.
It may be 1%, 0.5%.
Hmm.
Or it may be, as I talked to a gentleman client yesterday, about 5.
Hmm.
So you really need to pay attention to what your money funds are yielding or savings accounts. Now, savings accounts are still at the 0.1 to 0.2 range for most.
So I have a question, if I
may. Yes, sir.
If they're pulling money out of the market, say, and putting it in money market funds, why not in Treasury bills that Heidi's talked about the last few weeks?
Well, that is another option.
Okay.
And that's one of the interesting things that Dennis is going to talk to us about, is that we've lived in a world for so long that at low interest rates where there weren't a lot of opportunities for cash. What are we just expect we're not going to earn anything on our savings account. But now with the rise in interest rates,
it's a brand new conversation. Mm-hmm. In the weekend in the Wall Street Journal, investors, you know, doing much better on cash balance yields these days. So you really do need to pay attention to this. You know, what am I getting and what's a great rate? It's interesting to note as well that the yield inversion is still going on. That's another part of this puzzle. Whenever you think about the end of a rate hiking cycle, which everybody keeps saying, I think we're near the end. Maybe 0.25%. Conversation yesterday. You get it. So right now, I think the Fed discount rate, if you would look it up, Ron, I think it's 5.25%, 5.5%, whatever it is. Anyway, I'm only in the financial industry. Why should I know that? The potential beginning of a cutting cycle, the front end of the Treasury curve has tended to be the most sensitive. That presents opportunities for positioning in rates and in credit. So it is 5.5% right now. Thank you. Now, what's interesting about that is what they're saying in this article was wrong. So what goes up must come down. They were partially wrong in this. A big question facing investors is just how long short-term bond yields may remain at historically high levels. So as bond yields come down, the values of those same bonds tend to increase. So everyone's kind of saying, well, you know, if I want to make a diversification move into getting into shorter-term bonds, perhaps, or even intermediate-term bonds, could that be a good value right now with relatively low risk? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. While yields fall somewhat after the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, does anybody remember that? Isn't it amazing how quickly that stuff goes into the rearview mirror?
Yeah.
There is still potential for them to tick higher given the strength of the U.S. economy, which has stayed stubbornly strong in the face of the Fed trying to weaken it and thus control inflation due to their own profligate spending habits. Did I pronounce that correctly? I'm not sure.
Sounded good to me.
Profligate.
Yeah.
So fixed income portfolio manager for this intermediate bond fund notes that market players have largely split into two camps over whether the Fed has accomplished its mission of taming high inflation. Every time we get a new report that supports one camp or the other, you see significant volatility in the market. Volatility in the market. Or some would say volatility. I don't know what some of those are, but anyway.
Okay.
The sum of the sums equals a volatility in this case.
Take Dennis's coffee away.
Stop that.
He does have mocha this morning.
He's a little wild.
It's our favorite.
Yeah, it is. Chocolate, syrup, you know.
Chocolate that you drink.
Indeed. So then, this is interesting, too, this yield curve here. Short-term bond yields hit the highest levels in more than a decade this year. This goes back to 2013, when short-term bond yields were 0.5%. Can you believe how skinny that was? Speaking of skinny cows, huh? Now, they're at 4%. 4.1, 4.2.
Mm. That's and what amount of time is that?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years. Mm. See, class?
Yes.
Everyone
yes.
can see yes. it. Yes, you have the article.
Too bad everyone else can't see it.
Yeah, well, I know. I shouldn't tease the listeners like that. It's not very nice. Now, what's interesting here is that two-year treasuries are currently yielding about 0.5% more than the 10-year treasury as of this article. Now you would say, well, no, what's the difference now between 2 year and 10 years? 2 years are currently at 4.9%. 10 years is at 4.3, about 6/10 of a difference, of a point difference, rather. So that talk about an inverted yield, that is really stunning from a yield curve standpoint. Dennis, we're so excited. We can hardly stand it. It just shows the invaluability. Now, that's the wrong word. I know it is. But the incredible difference there in what's the expectation for a possible recession, given how much rates have risen, how much the Fed has raised rates. Yes. It just also shows the real opportunity for being in shorter term instruments at this point. Now, what you're always wanting to say perhaps is, well, where would the opportunity be? Well, before we come into this supposed recession, having locked in some yields maybe a bit longer. And why would you do that, you say? Because short-term rates drop precipitously. Boom, all of a sudden, overnight or over a few weeks, we're at 3.5 instead of 5.5. Right now, Treasury bills are at about 5.3 to 5.4%.
Mm-hmm.
Six months. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So for short-term investments, you said, are any people saying, well, let's just take a load of that retirement money, 401 or IRA, and throw that into a short-term and get guaranteed 5.25%?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
We have a fair number of those clients who are saying, and we are saying, too, there's an opportunity there for short-term money, and then that gives us an opportunity to take advantage of other values as they come along. Mm-hmm. Because those T-bills are that liquid, mm-hmm. literally overnight. In that same day, they're liquid. Mm. Okay.
The risk is, though, if you do that, you may miss out on higher earnings in the market, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
Or in other possible investments. But keep this in mind. Again, 5 is a really nice rate. Where a year ago it was less than 1, it's a great way to bolster your total return for the year when you're thinking about using these savings instruments. So as a part of this, what's in the savings accounts? What's in checking? Do I have too much there? What are my opportunities to really increase my yield? For every $100,000, 1 point is how much? One point interest rate is how much on $100,000?
$10.
Higher.
For one, wait, one, one, oh, you mean one?
$100,000 at 1%.
1,000.
Yes, there you are. Sorry, I should have been more clear in my. See, ding, that's ding, why ding, I asked you, Ron.
Ding, 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 ding.
What did he say again? I don't know.
Hello.
The number's 10. It's
10. Yes. It's incredible. I mean, when you look at that rate increase, that is dynamic, is it not?
Oh, it is.
Yes.
So the people that are paying that 5.25%, the banks or whomever, they say, we want your money, and we'll give you 5% for it. What mm-hmm. do they do with it then? They turn around and loan it out to who's borrowing at a higher rate then? Is that for mortgages and consumer loans?
Car loans or
building
whatever.
Loans?
Yeah. Car loans, yeah. Building loans, the building and loan, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Okay. So usually banks are getting 3% to 4% spread.
Okay.
So it's going to be more difficult in this environment for them to get that kind of spread. That's why their earnings are being pinched. Mm-hmm. Pinched just a little bit. Well, if they're paying that, their average yields, they've been able to do the status quo thing of not increasing yields nearly as much on those shorter term instruments. That's why it's up to you. As has been said in my, you know, amongst the people I know, you have to be your own advocate when it comes to health care. Well, you need to be your own advocate in terms of savings rates now. You know, you've gotten to practice in terms of healthcare. Practice on this in terms of your short-term yields.
So, for example,
because you can brag to your wife. I mean, seriously, Ron, think about this.
Hello.
You come home in the evening and say, "You know what,
honey, I'm home."
Honey, I'm home. So perfect. And instead of us making only $1,000 a year on that money market yield, we're earning $4,000. I made $3,000. With a push of a button or a simple phone call this coming year. Not bad, you know, part-time income, whatever.
So what you're saying is if you have money in savings, where traditionally a lot of us build up our emergency funds,
yes.
and that cash is sitting there, those rates haven't moved very much. But because of the rising interest rate environment, money markets may pay more, and then T-bills may even pay you more than that. So you have more opportunities, and that's what you should look at, is if
Absolutely.
You have those funds in something that's not earning something, there's opportunities which have the same risk level that may offer you a larger return.
So, Heidi Cartwright gets the invisible high five from our listening audience. Thank you very much. Yes.
So it's a good way to earn interest and balance your portfolio.
It is. And really keep the risk down. And this could apply to money market funds or money market balances in your brokerage accounts or whatever. So how do you increase those yields and, you know, do well for yourself? Thinking about inflation, if inflation remains stubbornly high, it's a great way to help you keep ahead of it. And, you know, sometimes this happens without us really noticing. While I keep putting money into the savings account, we have those conversations and it keeps building because you're savings orientated. Now it pays to really pay more attention to that, if you will. That's what we're saying here. If inflation remains stickier than expected and the economy holds up, then we may be in for higher rates than the market's currently pricing in, Queen says. This is one of the money managers. My view is that rates will stay higher longer than market consensus, and the curve will probably stay inverted longer as well. He may well be right. We don't know. But if they do stay higher longer and the economy remains stubbornly strong, we could be in for an unprecedented longer time frame here, is what he's saying, on this inverted yield. And that can be great for those who are looking for better yields, even on the short-term side, 1 to 2 years. Now, isn't that interesting? On the one-year Treasury right now, the yield as quoted this morning was 5.37%. On the two-year, 4.973%. So almost a half a point lower on two-year money. Why in heaven's name would I ever get 0.4% less on a two-year note? Well, because, yes, I see that Heidi. Yes, Heidi.
Could it be that people feel that interest rates are going to go down in the near future within that two-year span, and so they don't want to lock in that money at a lower, you know, they want to keep short because they want to be able to pivot.
Well, they want to lock in that money on a two-year time frame because if they think rates are going to come down, obviously, if you just, as you've just said, you've then locked in that rate most assiduously, my dear. See? So it's a bit of upside-down thinking. Why would I do that? It's similar to what happened in the early 80s when money market yields were at about 17 to 18%. For those of us who were alive then, you couldn't talk anybody into getting a 12 to 14% treasury bond yield. They said, why would I ever take that? Well, in retrospect, those yields came down precipitously as the Reagan economy took a hold.
And you, if you...
he always injects politics into it, but no, as the economy changed, we'll just say it that way. Yeah. Those yields came down. Those who locked in the longer ones, they were in. Can you imagine getting a 4% treasury bond yield right now, 14%? How often will your money double at 14? About every 4 years or so.
Not
that's great. Bad.
I know.
Yeah.
So if you think interest rates are going to go up, you want to stay shorter. But when you feel that it's hit the peak, locking in longer.
Yeah. Often you're going to miss that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 years to double your money at 14%, to be sure. Now, what's interesting too, the point they make is as information emerges on the direction of the economy, the market moves very, very quickly to incorporate that data. We know that intuitively. By the time there's clarity, the market may have already moved to accentuate the point Heidi just made. Thank you, Heidi.
We have a question.
Yes, sir.
Don't want to sound naive, but where does the average Joe go to get these bonds, et cetera? Our bank or credit union? So if somebody wants a treasury bond or something that's paying 5 and 5.25%, whatever, what do they do?
You can do this through bonds.gov.
Bonds.gov.
Correct. Or talk to your credit union about locking in rates. Ask them what yields they have on 6 month, 1 year CDs, that sort of thing. You may be surprised. They may be surprised you ask them. All right. But, you know, find out what it is they're offering. because they may offer a much better yield on rates like that. Or they may have a specialized money market fund. Every bank is different. And then given what you find out, you may find that you have to go afield a bit.
If somebody is looking for short term, 6 months, maybe even a year, they should probably find something at 5% or more, do you think? Is that realistic?
It is realistic. A 5 at 6 months to 1 year is very realistic and very conservative money these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So bonds.gov or just check with your local bank or credit union.
Treasury Direct is a good
Treasury
website.
Treasury Direct. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And then you can also ask your investment professional if you have a financial advisor. They may be able to do that within one of the accounts you already hold with them.
So. Or if you like, call us. We can certainly help.
Here's another question.
Yes.
So if you're sitting on an emergency fund in checking or savings, wouldn't it make sense to put $1,000 a month into 12-month CDs so you still have liquidity each month that is rolling? Then when the yields drop, you can cash them out and put them into a long-term investment.
Depends on the bank, if they're willing to do that for you and use those kind of increments. So that could be a strategy as well.
And if you can trust yourself to have the discipline to do that every month. So you want to think about that, too.
Yeah, self-talk. So, Heidi, you are today discussing
the five biggest mistakes people make when picking a Medicare plan.
That's the one. Picking a Medicare plan. Now, a little complex, but important because anyone who is approaching the age of 65 needs to become aware of Medicare.
That's right. Or, as we were talking earlier, if you're listening and happen to be on Social Security disability, this information is quite helpful as well.
Great. Yeah. And or every year when the options come up, which we're going to have Laverna talking about in
at one of our Lunch and Learns coming up in September. I think it's September 20th.
September 20th. All
right.
Medicare 101. Dawn McConnell and Laverna Whitcup are going to be at our office in the classroom at noon. 12 to 1. If you want information on that class or would like to attend, please contact our office, 231-947-3992. And honestly, this morning, before you get started, Heidi, I was thinking on the way in, the acceptance by the public of us having this classroom has been really enjoyable. It's just fun having that as an option for people to come to these kinds of classes. So Medicare 101 on September 20th, Roth IRAs on October 18th. Learn about the benefits of this special type of tax advantage retirement account. And then on November 15th, Know Your Tax Bracket with John Sluice, CPA. November 15th, that's about a week before Thanksgiving, you know, so you can be happy after learning about taxes.
Maybe you'll have turkey sandwiches that day.
Ooh, maybe so.
Maybe so.
Turkey soup. So, Medicare.
Right. So, let's get right to the first mistake. So, the first mistake is underestimating the cost of traditional Medicare. So, what is traditional Medicare? It is offered by the government, and it has three parts. It has Part A, B, and D. Part A.
Isn't it like our government to have A, B, and D and not a C?
Well, C comes later.
Okay, well, of course it does.
Right, yeah.
It comes after D.
Right, because that's the way we organize things.
Okay.
So what does Part A covers for inpatient hospital services, among other things, while Part B covers physician services, and Part D is for prescription drugs. So the big appeal of traditional Medicare is that you can visit any hospital or doctor without a referral or prior authorization of services and all that. So it can be attractive if you have doctors, specific doctors that you want to keep. If you travel a lot within the U.S., you may need care in different parts of the country. So this could be a better plan for you. Or you may think that you might benefit from a treatment that a private insurer may deny. So maybe there might be certain circumstances which traditional Medicare would be better for you.
Which is already saying then you really need advice when you're approaching this.
So if you claim Social Security before you're age 65, as almost half of Americans now do, the Social Security Administration will automatically enroll you in traditional Medicare when you turn 65. So traditional Medicare for many is just the automatic change that Social Security sets up for you.
And speaking of setup, it could be a setup that's rather negative for you if you allow it to just go as it will.
Because a different type of plan may be better for you.
Yes, a much better for you. Could make a significant difference.
Right, and some of that could be cost, because the traditional plan can come with significant costs. Part A premiums are often zero for those who have worked at least 10 years. But if you haven't worked that period of time, the premiums can be up to $500 a month, okay? Part B carries a premium that are based on your income. For most people, the Part B premium cost comes to about $165 a month, but can go up to over $500 a month if your income is large, or if you come up against those limits.
For this number, a modified adjusted gross income exceeds about $370,000 for couples or $180,000 for individuals. That is the... Part B premiums can be as much as $561 a month for those married filing jointly with over $750,000 of income. So there's quite a variance there. Mm-hmm. It starts at about $165 and can go all the way up to about $561, depending on your level of income, rather. Yeah.
Okay, so for an example, with traditional Medicare, a hospitalization is accompanied by a $1,600 deductible. Likewise, a hospital stay for longer than 60 days carries a $400 copayment a day, and a skilled nursing facility stay longer than 20 days will cost $200 a day. So you will also be responsible for 20% of the Medicare-approved cost of the physician services during your stay.
So that's a great reason right there. $200 a day times 30, about $6,000 a month. Mm. So unlikely that you're going to have that kind of a long hospital stay, but that's one reason you really want to take a look at this and take some time well spent getting advice on this again.
Right. So that brings us to mistake number two.
Yes, ma'am.
Underestimating the cost of Medicare Advantage. So what is Medicare Advantage? It is an alternative to the traditional Medicare. You must first sign up for Medicare Parts A and B, and then you can sign up for Medicare Advantage Plan. This is often called, Ron, Part C.
Your favorite part.
Yeah. This option usually is a bundle of Parts A, B, and D delivered by a private insurance company, and these insurance companies are approved by Medicare.
Speaking of quizzes.
Now, some Medicare Advantage plans don't include prescription drug coverage, that Part D, so you have to be able to check, or you should go and check and make sure if you're expecting that and don't want to get an additional Part D, that it's included.
That's why a good insurance advisor is going to ask you, what prescriptions are you currently on?
Especially if you're on very expensive prescriptions. It could be quite costly for
you
if you don't
have that
in your plan.
Yeah, what can some prescriptions run, Deanna? Yeah.
A lot.
So thousands of dollars a month.
One prescription could cost a car payment, monthly car payment.
Easy.
Easy.
Yeah.
On the traditional Medicare, Heidi, you said Part A could be a zero premium, Part B, 165 up to 501.
Mm-hmm.
The Part D, though, RX, what's the premium for that? Do you know? Or
they don't quote that because there's so many different plans out there.
All right.
I will talk about that next week. Okay.
Got it, yeah.
So going back to what a Medicare Advantage plan, these companies often tout zero premium plans, and some offer out-of-pocket expenses lower than traditional Medicare and are often zero. Some plans can cap out-of-pocket expenses at a total of $9,500 for a combined in-and-out network coverage. In addition, Medicare Advantage companies are paid a fixed amount of money each month by the government. So companies have a strong incentive to reduce their costs by providing more generous coverage for medicines that keep you out of the hospital.
Now, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so they're really working to, obviously, to keep the cost down because they're incentivized to do that. That seems pretty simple. But it's interesting that they would pay for more medicines.
Yes.
Okay.
So zero premium applies to Part A and D, meaning that you still are paying Part B premium.
And again, the Part B was anything between 165 and 565 or whatever that number was. Yeah.
And often they'll have in-network and out-of-network doctors, and the reimbursement or the coverage could change depending on if you're in or out of network. So those distinction limits need to be looked at before you sign on to one of these plans. So what does that mean? That means you have to do some homework. There are 40 different Medicare Advantage plans in some states. So you need to look at some of these, and you may need help with some of the heavy lifting, like Dennis was saying, and look to a professional to help you sift through these different options. Mm-hmm. There are HMO options, which are usually the cheapest, where you have an in-network array of doctors and care facilities. Then there's PPO plans that may offer in and out of network. So you must sort of put it through your individual filter and your health and what your health needs are as to which plan is going to fit you the best.
Which is so true, because some people travel to Florida for the summer. That will depend on what Advantage plan you would want.
Right. But usually they go in the winter.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say
summer. Yeah. Winter. Thank you.
I knew what you meant, though.
I'll go to Florida any time of the year.
Really?
All right. So this takes us to mistake number three, choosing traditional Medicare without Medigap. So what is Medigap? Medigap is supplemental insurance sold by private companies that helps traditional Medicare beneficiaries pay for the cost of sharing in parts A and B. So we talked about some of those numbers under our first section. So this is something that may cover what your out-of-pocket responsibilities are.
So this isn't A, B, or C, or D. This is Medigap.
Medigap.
So we have A, B, C, and D in Medigap.
Actually, right. A, B, D, and C.
Sorry, I got it out of order. You're out of order there.
So these plans will vary in the degree to which they pick up the cost sharing in traditional Medicare. Medigap, A through D, then there's F, and there's G, and there's
baby.
K, and there's N. So those letters have nothing to do with your Medicare Part A, B, and D cost sharing. It's just what they will cover of that, the amount that you have to pay. So, yeah. So this is another reason why we're like, wow, you know, this is one reason why we wanted to have something like our Lunch and Learn, is because we're already well through the alphabet.
Well, here's a great quote from the article itself. If you're confused, you're not alone. Even with a PhD, I have to look this all up all the time, says the writer of this article, to keep it straight.
So a good time to start exploring this is 6 months out, do you think,
exactly.
Or what?
Exactly. Laverna was in, I don't know, a couple of years back, and she said to me, Dennis, you ought to look at this about a year before, her view, a year before you get started, just to go the ins and outs, begin to learn about it. She said, come into the office. Now, I would say any time when they're not in the active enrollment period, because anybody who's part of Medicare will want to go, and I think, and go and see their agent or at least talk to them during the active enrollment, which will be coming up later this fall. But for those who aren't yet signed up, I would say sometime in the off season is a great time to visit with them.
Right. And something else to keep in mind with the Medigap policies, Medigap is regulated by both the federal and the state regulators. So plans work differently in different states. There's different rules. So that just adds a further complexity to that.
I'm sure Michigan's the best, just in case you're wondering. Okay.
Right. All right, mistake number four is forgetting to get prescription coverage. So as with Medigap, many people simply don't know a basic fact about Part D of traditional Medicare. You are not automatically enrolled in it along with Part A and Part B. You must actively select this plan, which covers prescription drugs. Not doing so can leave you stuck with the cost of prescriptions, and you have only 63 days after your initial enrollment in Medicare to enroll in Part D.
Most people would say 2 months, Ron. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why they picked 63 days, another great question answered. Who knows, right?
So if you fail to sign up for Part D, your Part D premium will permanently be higher. For every year that you do not make a choice on your Part D premiums, they will rise about 12%.
This is such a good point, because I remember Laverna specifically saying more people forget the prescription coverage than you would think.
Right.
Like, this is so important to make sure you cover this base.
Right. And and you're not automatically signed up like the A and B.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is on you to make sure that you sign up for that.
Somebody texted a question. All Medigap is the same as Medicare supplement, right?
Correct. That's another word for it, another term Medigap that people use for that kind of coverage.
Good job.
All right. So Part D premiums are tied to your income, just like Part B premiums. So there is a lot of choice, though, in Part D plans. So you'll want to check out what do you take. And I will tell you that what they cover in prescriptions changes every year. I know in my mom's case, I have to go to Laverna and say, hey, you know, are all my mom's prescriptions still covered? Because it changes every year what they cover.
The average cost per individual, $43, for those who are wondering. I thought that, you know, that seems really quite reasonable to me, depending on the drugs you're taking or needing or prescriptions, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So another mistake is not going to your agent, like we've been talking about. And when we talk with our clients, we talk to them about having a professional team, you know, behind you. You want to have a CPA. You want to have an attorney. You want to have a financial advisor. But you also want to have an agent that can help you with your Medicare questions and coverage, so that you build up a relationship with these people so that you can trust them. So when you're 10 years in, 15 years into the program, you know, and you have a working relationship, and they know what you need as you go forward. And so,
like anything else, ask them questions, because they are compensated by the insurers, so that you know. And this can create in this article, it says it can create a fundamental conflict of interest in the advice they provide, as it could for any situation or most situations. So be aware of that as you go in there. Make sure you ask them questions about their incentives, if you'd like, and or if they're incentivized to sell one plan over another, and how they give you that advice, and what other plans they may not be telling you about. I mean, they may have a go-to that they're most familiar with. As in any case, is there something that you're missing as a part of this? Is a great question. Are there other plans I should be aware of? And what? How could those possibly help me? And or would those be more better in my? Those would be more in my best interest. Now, some who have great health at this time don't need all of these plans, and you can wind up saving yourselves and self rather an incredible amount of money. But once you get enrolled in it, then you can get that. Your costs aren't going to go up, as Heidi mentioned, too. So you need to weigh all of this. Do I need the prescription coverage or not? Do I have other health issues that I should try to cover or not as a part of these plans that they might offer?
Right. And I would just put out a caution for everyone, too. Neither traditional Medicare or Medicare Advantage plans cover long-term care. This is not a long-term care solution. So that's a separate issue. And there is a resource for advice. You can go to State Health Insurance Assistant Program, or SHIP. So it's got free counseling and assistance, and it's shiphelp.org.
Say that carefully.
I know. You told me to say it carefully. Hopefully it works.
Indeed. Deanne Jennings on the stats related to what we've been talking about today. Hit it, please.
All right, here we go. Shelter prices headed for the basement. One of the primary factors keeping consumer price index elevated in recent months has been the price of shelter, which accounts for 30% of the overall index. But according to a recent study from San Francisco Fed, shelter inflation is set to slow and may even turn negative by mid-2024 in what would be the most severe contraction in shelter inflation since the global financial crisis of 2007 and 9. And that source is San Francisco Fed. Of the 14 countries rated AA or above by Fitch, the United States has the highest estimated 2023 deficit as a percentage of GDP and the second highest interest expense as a percentage of the revenues. At over 8% for the U.S., only the United Kingdom is higher at 10% plus, and Canada is the only other country whose interest expense is greater than 4% of revenue, and that source is Fitch, and we talked about that last week.
We did, yes, and not a happy stat at all, because there are a lot of countries named, I believe, 25 to 30 different countries named of the major industrial powers in the United States.
Mm-hmm. With less
rather in the world. Yeah. Sorry.
As of March 2023, 65,748,297 people are enrolled in Medicare, an increase of almost 100,000 since the last report in September. Of those, 33 million are enrolled in Original Medicare, 31 million are enrolled in Medicare Advantage or other health plans, and that source is Center for Medicare Advocacy.
So it's really a pretty good balance between the two, and people are taking more advantage of other plans, no pun intended.
Yeah, and they're saying Medicare Advantage is working its way up. Mm-hmm. So, for over 3 years, federal student loan borrowers have not had to make payments. That's about to change. Payments are to resume in October. Although payments aren't due until October, interest will start accruing at the beginning of September. About 44 million borrowers in the U.S. were affected by the payment pause, which began in 2020. Average monthly payments is between $200 and $299 per person. Collectively, borrowers will pay about $10 billion a month, and that source is Market Briefs.
So that's going to take a lot of money out of the consumer spending part of the economy.
It certainly will.
Absolutely. Do we have time for one more?
One more, yes.
Okay. For years, China has been the pinnacle of global economic growth. In recent months, its economic slowdown has shocked leaders, policymakers, and investors. Since April, disappointing economic data and population stats have sparked plenty of concern that China may be facing a period of much slower growth than anticipated. Mm. Its economy barely grew in April to June compared with the previous quarter. For the first time in decades, the world's second economy is the problem. The country's deep in debt and signs of deflation are becoming more prevalent, and that source is Market Briefs.
Perfect, all right. Deanne. Thank you.
We have to wrap up another episode of New Retirement Radio, Prout Financial Design. Thank you, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, and Deanne Jennings.
Awesome,
thank
Ron.
You,
thanks
Ron.
A lot.
Thank you, Ron.